Lester, along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom is engineering. He's on the other side of the glass and feeling very good. He was a little bit down with that flu a few days ago, but he's at his peak again. Good to have you with us, Tom, and myself, of course, welcoming you to the Buckmaster Show, our Friday edition, January the 16th, 2015. Hope you had a great week and are looking forward to a wonderful weekend. We are live here, noon to 1. On AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, we stream and podcast the show, which means you don't need to be in front of a radio. As long as you're by a computer, you can log into buckmastershow.com or kvoi.com, and you'll get the live stream wherever you are in the world. On Friday especially, we like to do a shout-out to the media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, a supporter of the Buckmaster Show, Inside Tucson Business, the Green Valley News, and Sahuarita Sun, and TucsonLifestyle.com. Our Friday Focus interview this afternoon, Cam Juarez is with us. Mr. Juarez is a member of the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. Joining me to question Cam is Mari Herreras, the relatively new editor of the Tucson Weekly. If you would like to join in the conversation, perhaps you want to weigh in about TUSD. Cam is always likes to hear what input from the listeners, don't you, Cam?
I do.
Yeah, I mean, whether they've got good, bad, or whatever, that's what you're there for as a board member. You want to hear those things.
Constituents across the board, we need to understand.
Cam, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, Happy New Year, Bill. Happy New Year, Mari. And as I said before, congratulations on your new position over there at The Weekly. I also want to wish everyone else, all your listeners, a Happy New Year and a Happy Martin Luther King Day.
Yes, and Mari, good to see you. And of course, as we have said before, congratulations on the position.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for your sympathy. Thank you very much.
Seems to be going well. You hired a new staff writer.
Yeah, we did. We have a great team in place. Our first person that we hired was a food and music writer on staff, Heather Hawk, and she's been fantastic. I keep singing her praises everywhere because they're really well deserved. And then the second person I was able to hire was Maria Taracena, who was an intern with us before long ago and was at ACPM, and I'm just thrilled that we have her kicking butt and
good
out there. And
good,
we have a new website editor, too, who is also a writer as well, who's on doing some great stuff online.
Fantastic.
All right. That's good news as the Weekly moves forward into 2015, making it newer and better. If you would like to join us again, 790-2040 of questions or comments for Cam Juarez, TUSD Governing Board member. We also want to welcome anybody that would like to join us on the Bill Buckmaster Facebook page. I think we're about two or three friends away from 3,900 now.
That's
so
cool.
I'm proud of that. I know you are and appreciate it, and Mari is as well. Okay, Arizona becomes the first state in the country to require folks, high schoolers, to pass a civics test before they are eligible to graduate. Your reaction, Cam Juarez?
Well, you know, if you read the whole thing, it talks about at least the kids passing it at a minimum of 60%.
60 out of 100 questions.
Yep. So I mean, it's assuming that our kids can't pass the U.S. government class with a D. I would like to think that we're graduating students that are definitely doing a little better than that. I would say that quite frankly, it's red meat for the base. It's really something out there that just says, hey, look at us, we're Arizona. And I, quite frankly, I'd like to see what their aggregate score would be of our friends up in the state legislature with this
test. Each lawmaker was required to pass it.
But, you know, it assumes a lot of things, and I think a great number of our students are going to be able to pass this test without flinching. It also needs to consider other elements, 504 plans, kids with developmental disabilities, that kind of thing. So we need to make sure that we're looking at this mandate that they're putting on public schools yet again. And I hope that if they're going to put this mandate on us, and it looks like that's going to be the case, that they at least have the decency to fund it. And our friends up in Phoenix have a couple of IOUs to public schools, so I hope that they can take care of that before we move forward with dropping down another unfunded mandate on school kids.
Here's Mari Herreras.
I agreed. I mean, I thought it was just playing to the base and playing to the voter. The people who voted for these fine people. And I can't imagine that there's a lacking of civics education. And I was talking about this with someone yesterday about who teaches history in at Tucson High, for instance, mm-hmm. that these kids are getting a hefty dose. I know my son Absolutely. Was at Miles. They did a whole huge thing on American history when he was in fourth grade there.
Absolutely.
So I don't think it's something that we're lacking. I would love it if it was more, wouldn't you love it, Bill, if it was more based on government and like how our government structures run?
Right.
And
democracy.
Yeah.
Anytime you have kind of that, the rote memorization, the kids will memorize what they need to pass the test. Sure. You wonder how much retention is there.
Yep. I mean, my son's in kindergarten and they're already talking about state capitals and different elements of different states around the nation. So I think not just TUSD, but I think all districts are doing a fine job in teaching a lot of these elements in this test. But again, you know, it's great that they're focusing on education. I hope they can focus on funding education.
So how is TUSD look in the beginning of this calendar year financially? How is the district look?
You know, there is a lot of I don't know what to call it exactly, but I'll be nice and just say that there's a lot of rhetoric that was being tossed around during the election cycle. Really, a lot of it was the stuff that you see around political cycles. But nonetheless,
the district's broke. And,
right. Yeah. Right. Let's scare people into voting for me. But what I was going to get at is that we're fine. We're actually going to be carrying over some funding into our next election or into our next finance cycle. But we're very confident in Ms. Soto, our new chief financial officer. And she's not only has she been very upfront with the information, but she was able to dig back into some of her predecessor's information, and we were surprised to see some of the things that we did. But nonetheless, she is not only providing us a very clear and very transparent budget, but she's providing a lot of very solid presentations and information before and after the board meetings, which is something we need to see as board members, because we're the elected officials that are going to approve that budget ultimately. And we didn't see a lot of that before. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to compare the two, for me being a new board member 2 years now, I think it's really important to be able to have that information that's not only transparent, but also accessible.
Here's Mari again.
What can you give us an update on where we are with the recent decision or recent ruling by the judge in Phoenix on the state funding that's due to TUSD?
Well, you know, as I understand from the governor's the newly elected governor's state of the state, they're arguing that he's not necessarily saying that he wants to go to court, but he's saying, hey, public school systems around Arizona, we want to work with you on this. We don't have the $1 billion that we owe you, but we'd like to work with you. At this point, the state owes TUSD specifically about $15 million for this academic school year.
$15 million?
1-5. Okay. And then another $15 million for the next academic school year. So at this point, we would love to have some of that money in order to be able to maintain our schools and upgrade some of the systems that need to be upgraded. But as far as I understand, and I don't want to speak for the governor or even the state legislature, but I understand that they're really at this point trying to negotiate whether or not they're going to have to pay the entire amount. $1 billion they claim would break the state, and I think that's a realistic situation. But this is an idea of not necessarily just taking care of what's broken, but making sure that we don't continue to do that. And public schools, as we know, nationally are underfunded, and this is something that we need to do in order to look forward and not look backward, but look forward at what is going to be our economic vitality in Arizona.
When people knock TUSD, and there certainly are a lot of people who like to knock TUSD, they always say not enough money goes into the classroom, that every dollar, I think it's what, 50 cents goes into the classroom, something like that, about half.
You know, we
and
just...
And they really give you all right. pounding on this.
I'd like for some of those folks to explain to me what they believe is going into the classroom, because I spend probably about $100 a quarter on supplies for my child's classroom.
Your own pocket.
Out of my own pocket, and I'm sure the school teacher does as well. All of the school teachers do. When we talk about what goes into the classroom, one of those things is a teacher salary and the teaching assistants and counselors and librarians and bus drivers and you know, cafeteria workers and custodians. And we just recently gave, at least the board majority voted for an all-across-the-board raise for everyone. It was a little different with the teachers because of the negotiations that were done there before with the teachers' union. But nonetheless, across the board, the first meaningful raise in 3 years. And that's part of what goes into the classroom. That's what keeps our students doing what they need to be doing, which is learning.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. Matthew is hanging on the Buckmaster Show live line. Matthew, can you hang on? We're going to take our first break here at 12:15.
No problem.
Okay, and we'll be back with you after we hear from the great lineup of people who have stepped up and support the Buckmaster Show. Buckmaster is an independently owned business, and the people who support the program, we thank them very much, and we ask that you support them. We'll be right back.
Honey, welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.?
Flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Today's rapidly changing world brings challenges and opportunities. At Pima Community College, we are working with business and community leaders to develop programs that provide the right training for today's high-demand jobs. Whether the goal is a new career, transferring to a 4-year college, or lifelong learning, Pima Community College can help you open the door to new opportunities.
For more information, call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
The Regional Transportation Authority has completed more than 570 projects to date. Our projects range from new roadway lanes to new transit services, plus new sidewalks and bike lanes. The Regional Transportation Authority also funds crosswalks for added pedestrian safety and new signal technology to keep people and goods moving. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
Hi,
Wouldn't you like a voice like mine talking about your business? Saying things like, thank you for calling, or press 1 for hours and directions. Well, it can. Cox Business offers Voice Manager, allowing you to get a professional voice to record your voicemail greeting. And with my voice, you'll need to warn whoever manages your lead gen data, because your customer base is about to expand. If you don't like my voice...
There's always mine. Thank you for calling. All our customers are important to us. How do you like that?
I think mine might be more appropriate.
You don't know that.
I can do fancy accents.
Oh, as good as this.
Make a great impression before you answer the phone. Cox Business Internet and Voice Manager is only $84 a month for the first 6 months with a 3-year agreement. Plus, get a $150 Visa prepaid card after online redemption. Bundle and save today. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 5/3/15. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Actual speeds vary. Other restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I love that bump music. That's that group Coldplay.
Yes, sir.
And that's the song slips my mind that this is the intro to, but it's my kind of favorite Coldplay song.
Like
so maybe somebody knows what the name of that song is. Would love to hear it, hear from them, and so they can inform me. Matthew is waiting on the... Oh, thank you. Tom knows.
La Vida.
Yep. So, Tom, you win the prize. Tom Fairbanks, our wonderful engineer today. Cam Juarez is here. Cam is one of the board members for the Tucson Unified Governing Board. And Mari Herreras, who's doing a wonderful job as the new editor of the Tucson Weekly. Matthew is waiting now to speak with Cam. Go ahead, Matthew.
Well, I think Mari can already speak to the survey that the governor quoted as 90% was discounted in multiple news reports again when it first came out as to why this all even started. I actually took that test when this all happened like a year ago or plus or minus, and the test for the for citizenship. And I was surprised. I took it for fun, and I did get 10 out of 10 just on one of the quick links to it. And but it's not. It has nothing to do with civics. I mean, it's just random questions. The big cost I would ask Cam is, as I listen to the legislature and people talking to them, is the cost to you guys to implement it, because the testing time requires now that you devote time to educate the students, and that could go from 90-minute courses to 2 days. Taken away from the students,
sure,
just now for this test, and I doubt that the legislature is providing any funding. And the last thing I would ask is if Cam could talk about the reduced cost in the because of the gas prices going down. There was a good news report that TUSD may actually be saving some money. Allocate to other things.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
I'll start with the second question first, and then I'll go back to the civics test. I just had this discussion with the superintendent a couple days ago. I asked the same question, and essentially what's going on here is that we have to budget for every school year, so we have to allocate so much funding. And sure, we can move some of that money around, but the problem is that the district buys gasoline in batches. And we hold them in our depot, and then so it's not like a bus driver will take his TUC credit card and gas up at the local Circle K. We actually gas those buses up in the morning whenever the tank is empty, and so that fuel has been bought in batches and are held in our facilities, and so that fuel might have been purchased before the gas prices started dropping.
But it's kind of like the airlines buying in bulk.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You get a contract.
So I mean, I'm sure we're going to save a little bit. Yeah. You know, if those tanks run empty right now when gas is so inexpensive, but really, I mean, it's an issue of procurement. It's an issue of budgeting. It's an issue of making sure that we're not going to be dependent on something that, you know, as the president said shortly after his visit to Phoenix, The gas prices will be going up. Be prepared, you know. So so just appreciate what we're going through right now. And but I don't know that that'll change our budget that much.
And the civics testing, how much is that going to cost?
You know, as I said before, we're already teaching this stuff. It's not as much of the time that we'll have to add to the instructional time. It's more the time that we have to add to administer the test itself. And it might be as simple as 1 hour, 2 hours, but this whole thing, you know, it's going to include some professional development with our teachers. Mm-hmm. It's going to include some sort of ensuring that we're not accused down the road of cheating on these tests. And so there's going to be some inevitably.
And it takes time away from the other things that you're supposed to be doing.
And in a state where we have a 4-hour block, which already segregates students that are English language learners.
Oh, that's another level, you know, there.
So, I mean, it's really, again, we're not going to tell them how to run the state, and they shouldn't be telling us how to run public education. But, you know, again, it's embedded in everything that we're teaching our students already.
There, I understand with the culturally relevant curriculum, you know, we've been writing about that again. Sure. And, you know, that Diane Douglas said that she seems to be happy with these classes. But you guys, nonetheless, are going to be meeting, I understand, this week, or was it this week that you meeting, or next week that there's a meeting coming up? I understand this from our staff writer,
right?
That and discussing what the options are and concerns about getting ready, basically preparing the district for
right.
What.
Just for clarity, when you say you guys are meeting, who?
The Tucson Unified School District governing board members.
Well, we're going to be meeting as part of our school board meetings on the 21st, and so that item inevitably will be discussed, whether it's discussed in executive session or out in the open. There, of course, we have concerns, and there's some of us that feel we're doing just fine. I mean, the curriculum is solid. It has been for well over a year, and we now have, you know, a director on this now, and he's got a lot of experience with the curriculum.
It's Lorenzo,
classes.
Right?
Yep, Mr. Lopez, and so we've got a very very dedicated staff. Just this past Saturday, I spoke to nine new teachers that came on to teach these courses, which is part of the reason why we're having so many problems. Is that teachers were really, quite frankly, afraid to teach the classes because of everything they read and hear on the news. So we finally got a good, courageous batch of teachers that are saying we can do this, and they're going through their professional development. And really, we're not talking about creating, you know, new courses. We're talking about providing perspective in regular traditional courses, language courses, history courses, from a perspective of African American or Latino students or experiences.
And Diane Douglas said, in principle, she agrees with these culturally relevant courses, but there are these deadlines that you're
March
facing.
4th.
Yeah, March 4th. Mm-hmm. That the district would be losing, I think, 10% of the monthly state aid, which amounts to about $14 million a year. Then there's the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which could rule, but not likely, within a couple of months. Usually those things take 6 to 9 months.
Right.
So you've got that deadline hanging over your head.
Well, I mean, Dave Safir put out a piece recently, you know, through the Weekly, where he was arguing that we should wait to make any changes until we hear from the Ninth District, the Circuit Court, and so, I mean, to a large extent, I agree with that, but we also have to be cognizant that we're dealing with two, you know, government entities. We're looking at the federal, and we're looking at the state, and so we're kind of caught in the middle, and we want to make sure that we're doing what we need to be doing. So as far as the information that we're required to be submitting to the ADE and to Ms. Douglas, this is all information we've already been submitting over the last year. So we're not going to make any tweaks or changes or water down anything. Everything is apropos, and so we are, I think we're well within the guidelines that they're asking for. I think there were some specific things that she identified and that Mr. Hoopenthal identified in his infamous letter on his last
his
hour.
His 11th hour letter.
And good for him for getting it out there before he had to pack up his boxes. But but quite frankly, you know, to say that, you know, that hip-hop and to say that you know, this and that is problematic in the curriculum, he had an entire year where the superintendent was asking for a meeting with him that he absolutely declined. And so he doesn't bring any of this issue up or these issues up until, you know, it's a lot of it is political pandering to their base.
The thing is, though, the CRC classes are part of the DSEG plan.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I think one of the things that came up the last go around was that the last Unitary Status Plan, those Mexican American Studies classes were also part of the DSEG plan. And so what people who were championing Mexican American Studies at that time are also kind of wondering at the same time, well, is this kind of whole thing moot to begin with? Because can we not rely on saying, look, the federal court has ordered us to teach these classes and it's been approved by sure. Judge Brewery. We're teaching these classes.
Sure.
Sorry, Diane,
mm-hmm.
go back to Common Core.
Right. You know, it's simple yet it complex at the same time, and I hate to throw that out there, but I mean, I certainly don't want to sound vague, but when you consider not only you know what the court has ordered, we also have to consider the plaintiffs and the plaintiffs, whether they're the African American plaintiffs or the Latino plaintiffs, the primary issue is that you know we don't always all agree. It's this trilogy, and then you add you know the special master to that conversation, and you're talking about. You know, a lot of folks and a lot of moving parts saying, "Well, we don't like it because there's not enough kick to it." And then you have the state saying, "There's too much kick to it." So we're trying to you know to travel that line as well as possible.
All right, we're basically out of time, but we have two callers who want to have their say, and I want them to have their say.
Sure.
Let's see if we can make this very quickly. Dan, go ahead first.
Very quickly. Thank you. What we taxpayers really want to know is if you are trying to help our Latino children assimilate into American culture, it sounds like you're just want to do the opposite. Go ahead.
Well, as a taxpayer, I can tell you that I was taught that as an American citizen, in my Mexican American Studies classes at the U of A, that I am a part of this society, not apart from it. So I'm a proud American, but I'm also very proud of my heritage. And what I'll tell you is these classes provide the confidence that these students need to be able to effectively engage in the curriculum, whether it's math, science, language, or history. These students are becoming doctors, a doctor that saved my son's life. So I don't necessarily agree with you, Dan.
Okay. And Zach, you will be the final caller here on the Friday Focus interview. Go ahead, Zach.
Thanks for taking my call quickly. Hey, Cam Morris, question for you is, TUSD, I think, is roughly about 60% Hispanic students.
Mm-hmm.
Are you in favor of TUSD getting away from the DSEG, which tends to hamper the district? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Zach, I'll tell you, I'm always in favor of getting away from and really resolving this case. It's almost 40 years old. But what I'll tell you briefly is that there's, again, a lot of moving parts to this, and not only are we talking about getting away from this DSEG order, we actually are looking at integrating our schools, which is very difficult when you look at the development cycles of our city, where you have some white flight, and then you have this belief that the district is doing a horrible job. When we can tell people these are the programs, the academic programs, sports programs, whatever you want, these are the families that are willing to come in from out of district to come to our schools because our schools are doing an incredible job. You take UHS, you take CE Rhodes, you take Carrillo Magnets. I mean, these are all great schools. And so if people don't really care whether or not they're in or out of the city. They want their kids to get the best education possible. So if we can do that, then we can attract more people to the district. And we can really get away from trying to – I mean, I'll go back 1 second, then I'll close with that. When this DSEG case came to bear, we were roughly the opposite in terms of the demographics. In other words, there was more Anglo students than there was anybody else. And now the demographics have changed, not only in Arizona, but nationally. So we're having to deal with that, which is why it's taking as long as it is, because the integration issue is problematic when our demographics, there aren't brown, black, or white schools. It's just the demographics of our community.
All right.
We can't tell people where to live.
Cam Juarez, thank you very much for coming on the program. Have a great weekend, Cam.
Thank you.
All right, we've got the Friday Roundtable. Murray Herreras will stick around, and Tim Steller now is in the house. Tim arriving from the Arizona Daily Star. That's next on Buckmaster.
Today's rapidly changing world brings challenges and opportunities. At Pima Community College, we are working with business and community leaders to develop programs that provide the right training for today's high-demand jobs. Whether the goal is a new career, transferring to a four-year college, or lifelong learning, Pima Community College can help you open the door to new opportunities.
For more information, call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Viro Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Viro Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Viro Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Viro Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amore on the web at viroamore.com. The Rug Gallery's extensive collection of new and antique rugs has earned an international reputation and has been featured on the cover of Christie's magazine, as well as many of the world's most respected carpet and textile publications. The Rug Gallery thanks Tucson for their support over the past 27 years as the place to see fine Persian and top quality imported and antique rugs at competitive, affordable prices. With its huge selection of hand-woven rugs from around the globe, the Rug Gallery has rugs just right for your home or the largest palace. The Rug Gallery is located in the Jostler Center at the northwest corner of River and Campbell and on the web at ruggalleryaz.com. Also, look for us on Facebook. Call 571-RUGS. That's 571-7847. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Monday, the Monday Political Face-Off, plus a tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on the national holiday in his honor. Buckmaster each weekday during the noon hour on AM 1030 KVOI The Voice, and always on BuckmasterShow.com for anywhere in the world live streaming, podcasts, and our show archive. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. And that music, Tom, sounds a little bit like Steely Dan to me, which I like very much. We were talking about Coldplay earlier. It is the Friday Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show. Thank you, Tom. It is The Fez. That's the introductory music to the song The Fez by Steely Dan. Tim Stiller joining us now on the Friday Roundtable, joining Mari Hereras. Mari is the editor of the Tucson Weekly, and Tim Stiller is the ace columnist for the Arizona Daily Star, who is now doing, I don't know, what do you do now, four columns?
Three, same as ever.
Someone calls in sick, it's not an extra.
Yeah, actually, I'm the one calling in sick lately with a lot of viruses going around.
A lot of stuff is going around. But anyway, Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
Has anyone ever figured out, Mari, how long you can continue to say Happy New Year to someone?
I don't know. I'm using it as much as I can possibly get away with.
I think we're about at the deadline. January 15th to maybe 16th. Actually, maybe
you may be the last person on the Buckmaster Show that I will be using that salutation.
Actually, I'm considering fast-tracking a bill in the legislature to declare which is the final Happy New Year date.
That would be something that I would be very interested in seeing.
I want this done by Monday.
There you go. Speaking of things being fast-tracked, in nearly 30 years of covering news in this state, I've never seen a fast-tracked
bill like this within a few days. And I'm talking like this being the civics test, our new law.
Yeah, I haven't been around that long either, but it took me by surprise. And the urgency that suddenly people were talking about this with, it just kind of struck me as strange. I'm not inherently opposed to the idea, but I just was talking to Chris Ackerley, the new representative from Southside, and he is on the committee that passed it, and he was just kind of he voted for it, but he was kind of shaking his head at
why would you vote against it, right?
He just had some questions, and you know that nothing could get there was no time for airing anything or researching
it. It was brought before the committee on Thursday morning and then approved that afternoon, right?
Right. Yeah. Both houses, the committees of both houses of the legislature, and then. Yeah, the committees of the whole in the afternoon, and then the governor signed it in the evening.
I mean, it's not like we don't have important issues to deal with, and we're going to find out more about what the governor has in plan for his spending blueprint. I think 2 o'clock this afternoon that's going to be released.
Yep, they're showing pictures of the infamous flash drive that they're going to hand them out on.
Okay.
It's innovation.
Well, everybody's got questions, obviously. The Republican governor is facing an estimated $1 billion, with a B, shortfall in the budget year that begins July 1st. He's got about a half a billion in the current year. So I think the big question we've all been asking since the State of the State and before the State of the State, what will the governor's vision be to attack this? Mari?
I don't think we know.
We don't.
We don't have a clue.
Yeah, right. The only thing he said is that he's not going to raise revenue, i.e. taxes, therefore he has to cut spending.
So we're going to stay this budget deficit.
therefore he has to cut spending. I mean, that's the only route. And hearing whispers, hopefully they're just rumors, that universities may take quite a whack.
Well, that he didn't mention it during the State of the State.
Right.
You know, universities were absolutely not mentioned during the State of the State.
And we had Ann Weaver Hart, the president of the University of Arizona, on the show yesterday. And I'm telling you, the university system is very concerned that they may have a target on their back.
Yeah, well, they're one of those few places where they feel they can just really get a good chunk out of the deficit. So maybe in the nine figures, hundreds of millions.
I mean, Steve Farley was on the show a week ago here on our Friday show saying that the rumor is there could be a zeroing out of university funding. I mean, hopefully it won't be that drastic, but that's kind of the rumor that's going around.
Right. Well, maybe that'll make people feel better when it's just a 50% cut.
Yes. When it's 5% less.
Phew! Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll find out about that. But the big item, I guess if you call it kind of the big thing, and you wrote about this, Tim Steller, that the governor has put forward, I guess your headline writer kind of summed it up best, I guess it's called Empty Schools Proposal.
Yeah.
it's weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, on the surface, as I said in that column, there's some sense to it. I mean, there are some school districts such as TUST with empty buildings, and there are public schools, mostly these more elite charter schools that have wait lists. And so, you know, they're both public schools. So he says, hey, let's fill the one with the other. When I talk to them about it, they're very insistent and we're not happy with my column, naturally. Because they say, hey, this could work for district schools just as well as it does with charter schools.
Yeah, right. Come on. But it's ridiculous. How is that possible?
Yeah. Well, he cited, when I asked him about this at the State of the State, Governor Ducey cited C.E. Rose as an example of a school that could benefit from this. And maybe there's some detail of this proposal I'm not getting, but I don't see why a district such as TUSD that has empty space needs the state involved if they want to move CEOs or something like that. I mean, maybe the state wants to give them money to do that. Well, that'd be fine, but I don't see him injecting money. Do you?
No, I'd heard that DC's folks were going around correcting press on how we were, you know, interpreting, I guess, this new proposal. Oh no, this is not going to be a giveaway to charter schools. You guys are looking at this all wrong. And like, well, why don't you explain it better then? And
yeah, I mean, I I beg to differ. I think that's pretty much a rhetorical. Rhetorically speaking, Governor Ducey, and I think to his credit, is trying to be position himself as the governor of all Arizona and not be and kind of move away from the divisive politics of the past. But, you know, that what really matters is not the rhetoric. It's what you're doing in your policies and your spending priorities. And for me, the way I look at it, it is an effort to somehow get the elite charter schools into these empty school district buildings.
The governor did not, there were some important things he did not talk about, Medicaid and that lawsuit, the challenge to the way the state expanded its Medicaid program, and that's been alive in the courts, and this is another one that's really flying under the radar screen that could really cost, that $1 billion figure could be a lot more in red ink if that Medicaid goes off the table.
That's right. The $1 billion for the schools.
Yeah, $1 billion for the schools.
Yeah.
Now, if you throw that in the Medicaid expansion, if you take that away.
Right. Right. So, which one will suffer? Is the we'll be back to talking about Medicaid expansion? I mean, is that what you're proposing, that will be the next thing that we'll have to discuss? Mm-hmm. And then Ducey, I guess, can reclaim a great. That he is back in everyone's graces as not being the guy who brought back Medicaid.
I don't want to be really hard on the guy. He is just starting here, and everybody that was up there at the speech, they thought, you know, presentation wise, it looked good and flowed nicely. But we're going to have to see, because the challenge that he is facing really is enormous. This is the biggest budget crisis this state has faced, I think, in at least 5 years, maybe more.
Well, yeah. And the thing that bothers me about the whole situation and that kind of takes the shine off of the new governor for me is that to an extent it is a manufactured crisis, manufactured by the fact that he has said there will be no new taxes, no new revenue, and, you know, a cutting of taxes if possible. And, you know, I'm not saying we ought to be raising taxes sky high, but a little tweak in here and there. I mean, even cutting loopholes, something Steve Farley likes to talk about a lot, can really make a difference. And rather than kind of taking a more balanced approach, as you might say, maybe a little closing loopholes or tax increase here and a little cutting there, you know, he's created a sense of crisis by refusing to increase revenue.
I want to give credit where credit is due. Supervisor Ally Miller had really pushed for ending this gifting that each of the Pima County supervisors was allowed to do some gifting to community groups, and she brought this to the attention of the board, and this week the Pima County supervisors agreed they will no longer be allowed to unilaterally donate money to nonprofits and other outside agencies directly from their office budget. So chalk one up for Allie.
Yeah, I guess that's true. We should thank you, Allie, and I do have her old office couch in my office right now, and I really appreciate that very much.
Do you
but
really?
Wait, no, I don't. I don't.
Tim and I are both going, really?
You guys wish you had that couch. Okay, yeah, okay. No, I don't have that couch. No, but it is kind of worrisome in the back of my brain, where I think of a lot of the nonprofits that kind of have depended on these gifts in the past, that they would make it part of their budget. And I know they're coming up with this new system, this granting system, but if I was running a nonprofit now, and I imagine you've talked to folks that you write about a lot, you know, the homeless groups or possibly, but that may be a little nervous about this change.
Yeah, they may be. On the other hand, you know, they got the same majority that existed before still exists. So I can imagine them passing these as small spending items as opposed to, you know, spending them from their office budgets.
Well, the county also agreed this week, the supervisors, on a tax break to lure Home Goods. Home Goods is a regional distribution center in Tucson, could employ up to 400 people. And the reality is, if you don't give some kind of a tax break, you're not going to get any new business.
Yeah, it really
is. It really is the bottom line.
It's a sad state of the world, especially for a city like Tucson these days, because, you know, we're desperate for some good news and some good movement, economically speaking, and it's a shame we have to resort to tax breaks and stuff, but that it's some people call it a race to the bottom, and maybe it is, but we don't have a way out of that. You know, we have to compete one way or the other.
I guess here we are talking about DC making what kind of net revenues are making allowances for folks to come into the state, and here's, you know, this is not an unusual thing. Cities do this across the country, but the only time I ever get nervous about is when we make deals, land swaps, and these special deals with downtown buildings. Those are the things I think that make me more nervous than attracting folks that we need to come in.
The petition to scrub the Oro Valley Country Club purchase, that was a 4-3 decision by Oro Valley. The petition went around, and I think they've got more than 2,000 signatures.
3,000.
And so they've got plenty of signatures. I'm going to make a prediction right here. Just kind of the way this feels, I see them, if this going does indeed go to a vote, that the people will say no to this thing.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly got an enthusiastic response.
Just a gut feeling. Yeah, I mean, it's just based on that enthusiastic response. It seems like the public does not like this deal.
No, they don't. Well, and I think they could have liked it, maybe, depending on how it was presented to begin with. But I don't think the Oro Valley Council and the mayor did such a great job of that. And that was, I think, what caused the friction or the issue, and then I think when our sister paper wrote to say, hey, why don't you guys do a referendum and consider doing that? Wow, you could do this.
Well, now they
and
got
then,
one.
Hey, here you go.
Right. Well, it strikes me that they also created a sense of urgency, the Oro Valley mayor and council, along with HSL Properties, which bought the resort.
That it had to be done.
Right, that it had to be done within 2 weeks. I mean, apparently they've been working on it in the background for a long time, so boom, then they dropped it and said, let's move. And no wonder people were a bit resentful about that. They wanted time to ponder it and influence each other, you know.
Yeah, and so there could be a vote on this. I don't know. They've been talking about May, perhaps, this going to the ballot. But, I mean, just based on this quick response, it just seems like they've got a lot of backing, that folks that do not like this.
Yeah, I mean, the city could make that, the town council could make that decision. Let's back off then and go about this a different way.
Or there could be money poured into what becomes a surprisingly broad and loud campaign, you know, about whether to buy these golf courses. I'm sure there are sources of money out there that would pour it in there.
And golf is just not... People are not playing golf like they used to.
Right. That's the big risk that was allegedly taken into account in the deal, but hard to see that. Yeah. I mean, they may, of course, had to base their decision to buy the land, the courses, on projections of what, you know, essentially turning black at some point in the future. And they have those projections, but gosh knows.
Golf courses notoriously take either several ownerships before they go into the black, or they just never do.
They don't.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to have to wrap it up. Tim, we'll look for your column on Sunday.
Oh, really? Who's going to write that column?
You're not writing a column?
All right. I just got to figure out what it is.
Oh, you don't know yet.
I'm juggling a few balls now.
Really?
I think I'm going to go for the civics test.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's a good one.
Do an old Pueblo civics test.
That's a good idea. Well, why don't you do that one? I'll do it. Let me see.
Mari, and we'll look for your work in the weekly. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Bill. You too.
All right. And Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too.
There you go. All right. Please join the UA College of Science, which celebrates the premiere of its 10th free public lecture series starting Monday, January 26th. This year's 7 lecture series topic is Life in the Universe, which explores our universe of molecular, biological, and cosmic scale to ask, what is life and how do we recognize it? Each program starts at 7 p.m. More information at cos.arizona.edu. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Honey, welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.?
Flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Sunlink Streetcar, Sun Shuttle, Twin Peaks Interchange, Valencia Road, Houghton Road, Saharita Road, McGee Road. Just a few examples of projects funded through the Regional Transportation Authority. Since voter approval of the RTA plan in 2006, the RTA and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 570 projects to make our transportation network safer and less congested. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
All right, that music officially welcomes, harkens in the weekend, Weekend Watch with Matt Russell. Matt Russell, Inside Tucson business, food and beverage columnist, award-winning publicist here in town, general foodie who is always looking for a great meal. Weekend Watch brought to you by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. If you're looking for something completely different, great environment over there. Visit the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. They've always got a fiesta or festival going on, it seems like, almost every weekend over there. Hike along the Continental Divide Trail. Stay at great places like Casitas de Gila guest houses. You can find about all of the things to do and places to stay by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing great on a beautiful Friday here in southern Arizona. There's no doubt about it. A delicious weekend is in sight.
You know, it's gotten to the point where if there's a good taco to be found in this town, you can find it. I don't know how you do it, but you do.
Yeah, I don't have to tell you how much of a taco fan I am, Bill. And I'm going to be checking out the new Street Taco and Beer Bar this weekend downtown at 58 West Congress. Now, these are traditional Mexican street tacos served up in a fast, casual atmosphere, ranging from carnitas to carne asada to barbacoa tacos with rotating salsas and a nice selection of burritos and tortas and other south-of-the-border street fare. Now, add a beer menu that boasts more than 100 selections, and you have the makings for a delicious happy hour today to get your weekend started. Street Taco and Beer Bar, Bill, here I come.
All right, and again, the location for that, Matt?
58 West Congress in the heart of downtown.
All right. Any fiestas going on?
Yeah, with such beautiful weather on tap all weekend long, I say tomorrow is going to be the great day to head out to Wilcox for the annual Fiesta Playa at the Zarpara Vineyard and Winery. Now, these guys are going to be celebrating their third anniversary in style with premium wine tastings, live music, and tasty tapas. And if we're lucky, Bill, they're going to be pouring their Zinfandel, a big wine with bold notes of blackcurrant, definitely one of my favorite varietals. Now, the event gets underway tomorrow at noon, and admission is only $15 a person. So I say spend the day in the wine country tomorrow at Zarpara Vineyards out in Wilcox.
I'm sure they're going to pour you a very liberal one, Matt Russell. You'll be enjoying it. Any new winter menus at some of our favorite restaurants?
Yeah, one of the things we just love about this time of the year is all these great winter menus that have popped up. I just got to look at one. Yesterday, Janos Wilder of Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails, he just launched his, and I say it's a must this weekend. This menu highlights the flavors of our region, like the local kumquats, grapefruits, and sour oranges that come together in a beautiful salmon and avocado panna cotta. Or how about the pasilla chilies and dragoon porter that help to braise his beef short ribs? This is a fanfare for foodies, Bill. And winter is really a season to celebrate at Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails.
Making me hungry. And you, how about the column this week?
Yeah, get this. A federal judge in California, Bill, recently overturned the state's longtime ban on foie gras. And I get the reaction of two local chefs who had some strong things to say about this duck liver delicacy. You could only read it in Inside Tucson Business this week.
Have a great weekend, Matt Russell.
Cheers, Bill. Thanks.
Big shout out to Mike Emery and the team at Perfection Auto Works. Thanks, Mike, for all you do for the automobile owners, the foreign and domestic owners in this town at PerfectionAutoWorks.com. They're located conveniently one block south of Speedway on North Beverly. The Buckmaster Show, a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for its content on behalf of the team here at KVOI. Tom Fairbanks, Ed Alexander, Ray Allen, and, of course, my executive assistant, Rosemary Brad. I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend. We'll be back with you Monday, 12:04. Have a good one.